It is time for Arts Live and Local. Well, I hope most of you realize that this is the time, few days in both directions, that we commemorate the life and passing of Martin Luther King Jr. And we're going to be talking about that, celebrating life and the dream. And we also start with just the title, Don't Let Go, Keeping the Dream Alive. We're in 2015. Mm-hmm. Have we kept the dream alive? Or do we look as though we're going to? Or
we're keeping the dream alive. We are struggling to keep the dream alive. I believe that cynicism is knocking on the door of many of us. We see things sliding backwards. We see people who are making just amazingly insensitive statements about people of color, about women, about gay people. We see all this coming up, and it makes us wonder if anything that we've done has had any impact. And I would say, yes, we've had an impact. One of the demonstrations of that impact is that we're talking about it, is that I'm sitting here in this room talking with you about that history, but also about the future of how we're going to get along, how we're going to change things.
So now I'm presuming that everyone who has either the radio or the computer turned on knows who Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. is and what the dream was. But perhaps you can talk about what part of that, because by he was extensive, as a matter of fact, we keep learning more and more about what he was involved in. But what part of that dream are you, have you been working for all, most of your adult life probably?
Well, and equality. But that, I think, ultimately, at its core, the dream is about peaceful coexistence. One of the ways we get there is through treating one another as equal beings, not having systems disenfranchise some or marginalize others. So equality is a part of getting to another piece of the dream, which is more emotionally grounded in how we get along with each other. And that's the part I hope people will think about in 2015. This was not just about how black and white people get along. It's how you treat your neighbor. It's how you treat the people in your city, your state, the nation, how we act in terms of the planet. You know, Dr. King moved from that civil rights focus into the focus on the war that was going on at that time.
Exactly.
Because he saw a connection between
mm-hmm.
them.
Mm-hmm.
So ultimately, when we talk about this, we can be talking about justice and liberty. Those all lead us to a place of being able to get along better together, to hear each other, and to communicate better.
So how are you from Oregon to begin
no.
with?
No. I was born and raised in the Midwest.
Oh.
I was born in St. Louis, and I spent a lot of my life there, but I also lived in Nashville, Tennessee. I lived in Mount Vernon, Illinois. I lived in Chicago, Illinois, which is where I graduated from high school. Jeff City, Missouri is where I spent my first year and a half at college.
Mm-hmm.
Then
you came out to Reed, is that right?
I came out to Oregon, and then I, well, yeah, there's a big break in there.
I noticed a few years.
Yeah. I came to Oregon to come to Oregon, mm-hmm. and then just circumstance led me to Reed. And mm-hmm. That was an interesting and wonderful and painful experience.
Mm-hmm. And that's because, when was that, in the 70s?
1971.
Uh-huh.
Reed had just experienced its internal upheaval around race. They'd established a Black Studies Department, which no longer exists. And there had been some pretty militant students on campus who had insisted upon some changes. And I came right on the tail end of that militancy. I found a place that was, that I'd never been in a place like that before. The privilege that belonged to everybody, the money, the kinds of ways they could move in the world, all kind of fascinated me. But the things that were painful had to do with the limited view of the students. For instance, being in a class and having a very earnest young white man ask, why are all black men pimps?
This is at Reed College.
This is at Reed College. This is 30, 40 years ago, however many years ago that is.
That's okay, yeah.
And the painful part was having someone try to explain to him why that was true. At which point I'm simply sputtering and saying, my father would kill you if you called him a pimp.
My father has worked two or three.
But, you know, that is an ignorance born of isolation.
Yep.
It's an ignorance born of being fed only that which is ignorance and no opportunity to learn something new. So what was painful also presented a learning opportunity.
Yeah.
So I got to say, the only thing you know is what you read in books, and you need to get out of that.
And hello,
yes,
here I
yes.
am. Why yes. don't you talk to me?
Yes.
Why don't you meet my family, etc. But it's true. I moved here in 1974, and the ignorance was huge. Now there were no black people here at that time, so. And I had to keep telling myself, it's not necessarily racism and antagonism. It's ignorance. But once someone is given the opportunity to learn, if there is no change, then it's clear that this is.
I think that it's very difficult for people to hear, just even hear the issue. The opportunity to learn can present itself in lots of ways that people may not recognize. But they have to put themselves in a place. Because just walking around your neighborhood and your daily routine that you've been doing for 20 years is not necessarily that opportunity. To learn something as significant as the role of the myth of race in the history of our country is to also relinquish a part of your identity as whoever you are. You become, I believe, a member of the human race by relinquishing that sense of superiority or being a victim. Those are hard lessons for people to learn. We keep approaching it as though all you have to do is just quit using this word that word, say you can sit at this counter.
Yeah.
It's not that simple. It's very complex, and it requires a vulnerability, and it requires a willingness to undergo a discomfort that most of us are not trained to do. We are not willing to do.
So you were willing to stay in Oregon after that experience, is that right?
Yeah.
You stayed and have been working ever since on issues.
I started before then. Okay.
Yeah.
So in 1947, riding the back of the bus and deciding I was going to ride in the front, and my dad was at school at Tennessee A&I State, and someone of his friends told him, and my father said to me, I hear you won't ride the back of the bus. And I said, no, sir, I won't. He said, why not? I said, I don't think they should tell us where to sit because we're colored, because that was a term then. And he said, you do what you think is right.
Wow.
Okay, so let's start there.
1947.
1947, Nashville, Tennessee.
Wow.
1957, Chicago, Illinois, I asked to have the civics class discuss race openly. And they did. We had one student leave. Because that was the deal. The teacher said, as long as people want to be there. This is the first time they got to talk about property values, movements, ghettoization, etc. And I was the one who said, let's do this. I don't believe we can continue the myth of the importance of race and still survive as the United States. But I do believe we can change this destructive force if we will talk about it and make ourselves vulnerable to change and vulnerable to the truth.
Well, I'm certainly glad you're here to help us talk about it, because that's one of the issues, is having someone step up to the plate and be able to talk from a place of experience. I didn't realize you were old enough in 1947 to be
I was born in 1940.
Okay.
I was 7 years old.
Wow, that's fantastic. So your connection with Dr. King, is that palpable? Is it because of his well-known image, or what?
When the civil rights movement started, I was not a person who believed that one should go south and let people spit on you and beat you. But I did admire that it was happening. Where I was in St. Louis, marching with other people, but not involved in the same way as the people who really went and put their bodies on the line. Over the years, I have watched the impact of people like Dr. King, Medgar Evers, people like even Jesse Jackson running for president, watching this conversation change because of his presence. And I see people wanting to have this conversation and not knowing how to do it.
Exactly.
And I believe that I learned some things and some good things at Reed, and that I have been able to learn how to help have that conversation. Dr. King taught me, the thing he taught me the most, the thing I think I learned from watching him the most was, take responsibility for your world.
Mm-hmm.
You are in it. It is your world. Take responsibility for it. What are you waiting on? The whole idea of nonviolence is, I think, a scary but necessary attitude.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not there 100%, but I'm a lot closer than I was 50 years ago.
Well, I want to remind folks, and I have Drew Herzig here as well from the Lower Columbia Diversity Project, that which brought Kathleen Sadat here tonight for a conversation at the Judge Guy Boyington Building at 7 o'clock. This is a free presentation, as are all the Lower Columbia Diversity Project presentations. Don't let go keeping the dream alive. Come and listen and come and talk. Am I right? You're going to want people to be engaged.
Right. It says a conversation.
A conversation.
I'm not going to talk for 2 hours.
No.
Okay.
And I'm sure there are lots of folks with questions, and this is a terrific opportunity. Drew, do you want to tell folks what's happening Monday evening?
Sure. And I want to mention that the Lower Columbia Diversity Project exists to provide the chance to have these difficult conversations that Kathleen was talking about. We've been having these over 3 years now. We've had conversations about Islam, about mental illness, about homelessness, about the Sikh religion, about equal pay for equal work. So we're here almost every month having these conversations, inviting people to come and speak and think and feel with us. One of the other things we're doing for the past 3 years, we've had a candlelight walk on Martin Luther King Day itself, and we're doing it again this year. 5:30 this Monday, starting in front of the Liberty Theater at 12th and Commercial in Astoria. Everyone's welcome to join us. If you can bring your own candle, that's great. We'll have some spares. And then we go to Peace Lutheran Church for a free soup meal afterwards. And it's just a beautiful, it's, as far as I know, the only Martin Luther King observance in all of Clatsop County,
mm-hmm.
Which it shouldn't be that way, but at least we've got something going. So that's this coming Monday, and everyone is welcome.
Right. And you can learn more. And also, if you have issues that you would like to hear about or perhaps present, or you know someone, as we reached out to Kathleen Sadat, let us know, and you can always call 503-325-1895, 1895. Leave a message if no one answers. And this is a community issue, and I am just thrilled that we're able to have you come here and talk. Is there anything else you want to tell folks about what's going to happen this evening why they should come?
Oh, they should come because they have questions, or they have answers, or they have a way of looking at something. This is not about me saying, do this, do that, do mm-hmm. this. This change comes about as a consequence of having discussions about things that matter. So come and talk about things that matter.
Great. Thank you so much. Again, tonight, 7 p.m. at the Judge Guy Boyington Building, 9th and Commercial. If you can't get there right at 7, come anyway, and we would love to see you there. And the more of us that get together to talk, the better off we are as a community, as a country, as a world. So thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for
Kathleen
the invitation.
Kathleen Sadat and Drew Herzig from the Lower Columbia Diversity Project.
Thanks, Carol.
And you are listening to Arts Live and Local right here on Coast Community Radio. And I just started taking a class, The Philosophy of Art, and I just want to say that it's all about how you look at the world, up close and not so up close. So for me, being able to partake in a conversation like this is part of the art of life. So I think it behooves us to take advantage. And I have right now a piece of music from our own Jackson Andrews, because if all goes well, he's going to be playing along with Dave Quinton, who's on this, well, I'm not sure if he's on this cut, but at the Tillamookhead Gathering, which is coming up. We're going to be talking about it next. Thanks for being here, folks.
Hauled off to jail. They're watching ballistic warheads ready to sail. Someone should warn.
And that was our own Jackson Andrews. And he's going to be part of an event which is coming up Saturday night. Tillamookhead Gathering is happening at the Seaside Convention Center. And it is an event to benefit the Seaside High School Arts, I believe. I'm going to let my guests tell you the details. Literary, visual, and musical arts. We have one in particular in mind right here, too. So Mark Mizell, who teaches English, ninth grade English mostly, but other stuff too, possibly. Mm-hmm. I'll let him tell you that, too, is here as a representative of the group to let you know what's happening. And it sounds like a huge gala event with author Carl. Now, how do you pronounce his name?
It's Marlantis.
Marlantis, okay. Who is the author of What It Is Like to Go to War and also Matterhorn. He has been here before, and this is a great opportunity to hear him. And I believe, is that right, he was from Seaside?
Yeah. That's, yeah, he graduated from Seaside High School back in the 60s.
Yeah, you didn't teach him. Mm-hmm.
No. No.
You're a little too young for that. And also local author, as in Cannon Beach, Peter Lindsay, our own Professor Lindsay, will be presenting, plus a mass of musicians, including Dave Quinton and Jackson Andrews, and Kelsey Mosley Band, and Mosley.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Boy, we had Mosley Water on last week, and now we have Mosley. Cute. And then several other musicians as well. So welcome, mm-hmm. Mark Mizell.
Thank you very much, Carol.
Now, tell us, how did this come about? It sounds like a fabulous event.
Well, we started kind of brainstorming for this thing back in April.
Wow.
I'm part of a five-person committee. We've been meeting informally at a coffee shop in Seaside once a month, and Seaside Coffee Roasters, Seaside Coffee Shop, and just kind of brainstorming, and the thing has kind of evolved and kind of taken on a life of its own, and it's been really a fun process getting mm-hmm. this whole thing together. But anyway, thanks to Mike Hawes, who teaches at the high school. He helped us get a hold of Carl, and we asked Carl if he'd be willing to come and speak at this thing. And he said the only way that he would go up on stage is if I could talk Peter Lindsay into joining us. and I talked to.
Did they go to school together or something?
You know, it's an interesting connection. Okay, they're both Vietnam War veterans.
Uh-huh.
And, of course, Carl came out with this incredible book, Matterhorn,
yes.
This novel.
Yes.
Well, he wrote Peter Lindsay into a scene. Peter Lindsay has a cameo appearance in Matterhorn.
Oh.
And they're buddies. I guess they go way back.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
Excuse me, Carl. My throat's kind of acting up on me. But
Peter said...
Well, he said he was honored. You know,
that's
lovely. Said he was honored to do it. And
so is this what was your initial idea of putting this event together, though? I mean, last April, that's a long time ago.
Yeah.
Is this an annual thing, or this is a first time?
This is the first time, yeah. This is the first time. And just it was kind of like one thing led to another, you know. And it's had so many ideas and so many people involved that it's taken on a life of its own, and it's been really fun to see. You know, kind of like this radio station. I mean, it started out, you know, as one, you know, just an idea, really, you know, and well, you know, it's amazing.
And a lot of work. But there's also
a lot of work and, you know, a lot of love.
It takes to put on an event like what you're doing and bringing people in as well. So
anyway, there's so many people that have been involved in this, you know.
And you've got a silent auction happening, is that right?
Yeah, and let me tell you a little bit about some of the things that are going to be involved in that. I'll just read them off. Can't read the whole list.
No.
There's like 30 or 35
just
people.
Pick out a few people.
Let's see. Micah Cirelli is donating an original ink and watercolor piece. Neil Main.
Mm-hmm. We all know Neil.
Yeah, he's donating a framed photo. Jan Pretty, who mm-hmm. I work with there at the high school, she does this. She's got what do you call one of those contraptions that weaves? You know what I'm talking
about? A
loom. Yeah, she's got a loom. Uh-huh. And anyway, she did this merino wool shawl, and she's donating that. I don't know if you remember last year or not, but we took a group down to Elko, Nevada, and we met up with Temple Grandin.
Oh, yes.
And anyway, I asked Jan before I left if she'd be willing to make something to give to Temple Grandin.
Wow.
And I didn't realize at the time how many hours it takes to make one of these things.
Yeah.
And I can't believe she didn't say,
Are you crazy?
But, you know, being wonderful.
Yes. Well,
she donated. So anyway, she's got a picture now. Temple Grandin has a picture of this thing on her couch, you know, that
beautiful.
Jan made. And then, let's see, I'm digressing, sorry. Barbara Ayers works at the high school.
Right.
Anyway, her son George made this beautiful Madrone coffee table, and he donated it. But it just, you know, there's just a whole lot of stuff.
So the doors open at 6. This is at mm-hmm. the Seaside Convention Center.
Yeah.
Doors open at 6 with a silent auction, and then the program begins at 7.
Yeah.
Now, you mentioned Elko. What's your connection with the students and Elko and art and poetry and all that?
Well, and this isn't just a literary fundraiser here. I mean,
no, I understand visual and musical arts as well.
Yeah. Oh, every 3 years, you know, my wife and I and usually another teacher take a group to Elko and to the Cowboy Poetry Festival. Anyway.
Well, it's important to this community because I believe that's what inspired certain people, maybe like John Broderick, to start the Fisher Poets Gathering here.
Well, I think he had it in mind, to tell you the truth, before the Cowboy Poetry Festival, it's been kind of interesting. There's been this kind of cross-pollinization between these two gatherings.
Yeah,
you know,
it sure has.
And I think it would be more accurate to say that both have influenced each other, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
mm-hmm.
Broderick is a force of nature, you know, John.
Oh, yeah. It's fantastic.
Yeah,
I love it. And we have our own cowboy poet who comes to the Fisher Poets Gathering. But as Mark says, this event, Tillamook Head Gathering at the Seaside Convention Center, this is tomorrow night, folks, is to benefit all of the Seaside High School arts.
Correct.
Literary, visual, and musical. And are we going to have a bunch of students there as well, or
I'm hoping so.
Uh-huh.
Vanessa Unger, who is the choir director at the high school, she and her trio are going to sing.
Oh, cool!
And it's Vanessa and Sydney Morrison, who mm-hmm. graduated several years ago, and Alyssa Smith. They've
mm-hmm.
got a trio,
mm-hmm.
and they're going to sing a song. Beautiful harmony. Vanessa's got just a gorgeous voice.
And then you have the
all of them do.
Let's see, you've got the Kelsey, say it again, Mosley?
Kelsey Mosley Band, yeah. And they're based in Portland, but she and a couple other guys played at the Seaside Brewery the other night. Man, it was really a wonderful show. But she's got a 5-person band.
Well, guess what? She's playing behind you. You can't hear it, but she's on the air right now.
Okay.
And she's also going to be live, her band, on Crossroads tomorrow. That's at noon right here on Coast Community Radio. So the event is going to be massive, and it is most of all going to be fun and also an opportunity. Where does Carl Marlantis live, by the way?
Well, he was living up in the Seattle area, but I believe he's moving back to Cannon Beach.
Great.
Yeah, in fact, Peter Lindsay's, I can't remember if he's, you know, Peter's a builder, and I can't remember if he's, I know he's been working on on his house, and I don't know if he's building.
So come tomorrow night, folks, and tell Carl he should come home. we're about out of time.
I plug the a couple of the other people? John Mercero is going to sing and play. He's got a wonderful voice. And Dave Quinton and Jackson Andrews.
Got
you already
them,
mentioned
yeah.
them, right?
And I've got Kelsey on in the background, and we're going to bring her down and let Mark go. This is your opportunity to support the arts in our local school, which is most important, and have a wonderful time doing it. Walk away with something very special from the silent auction, and something else very special, which is hearing an author and experienced person. And I think that will be terrific to hear Carl and Peter.
Can I tell them where to get tickets just real quick, like? Seaside Coffee Shop, Beach Books, and Seaside High School. $10 in advance, $15.
Yeah, we don't talk money here.
Oh,
but,
okay.
if you get them in advance, they're less expensive, so you can do that. And you can call Mark right now at 325-0010 after he's out of here. And check those out. Otherwise, show up at the door tomorrow evening. 6 o'clock for the auction, 7 o'clock for the program at the Seaside Convention Center. Thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you, Carol. Okay. Thanks so much.
You bet.